five-time All-Star Marcus Johnson.
Alongside Marcus Johnson.
What's up, everybody?
Hey, this is the Here District, captain of this vessel. And I got my first mate, my number one son, Chris Johnson.
What up?
Talk to me.
Holla.
Let it rain, man. Let it rain.
Obviously, I go, guess what? We're going back to the show.
Yeah.
Can't pass us all the bread.
Can't pass.
You know.
Go fight.
Welcome, everybody, to the Here District. Marcus Johnson.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Hey, welcome, everybody. It's the Here District end of the year holiday wrap-up show. I'm the captain of this holiday vessel, Marcus Johnson. Our first mate, Chris Johnson. What's up, Chris?
What's good, MJ?
Everything's good, man. How your holidays been so far? You get everything you wanted for Christmas and more?
No.
We never do.
Didn't get nothing.
Yeah. Man, I know you're just, he's just kidding, folks. No.
I'm not kidding. I didn't get nothing from nobody.
Wow.
But let's,
wow.
let's keep it pushing.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, you know, all right. Bah, humbug. But no, you know, Christmas, man, it's always this time of year. I think about growing up, the parents and the great environment that they would provide for us during Christmas time, and the tree and all the good stuff. So it's always a good time of year for me. And I'm just grateful to celebrate another one, man. But listen, this is the Fantastic Voice, man. This is the wrap up show. This is Chris Johnson, Marcus Johnson. I got to say this, man, the only father and son combination in the history of college basketball to win a national championship at the same school, UCLA. Chris got that representing on his sweatshirt right there. So I got to always give us our props for that, man. So
yes, sir.
Everything is good. Everything is good. But listen, man, let's talk about some of our best Here District moments for the year 2025. Can you believe it, man? 2026 is right on the horizon. Now, 26, Chris, that equals 8, man. To me, that's an even year. Even years have been good years for me, man. So I'm looking forward to some good things happening in 26. But right now, we're going to go a little bit retro and talk about this past year. And we're going to look at our favorite interviews. And I was looking over the options, Chris. We've had some heavy hitters, bro.
Yeah, you know,
here's your district, man. Give a shout out to Dylan Carter, Monas Khan.
Come on, man.
Our producers, man. I mean, we've had some heavy hitters. Yourself for bringing in quite a few of these on your own dime.
We're underappreciated. Underappreciated pod. Our roster of individuals, it covers a lot of different bases.
Yeah.
But the range of individual that we have spoken to this year is truly astounding.
Yeah. No. So it's really impressive. So now, right now, we're going to get a chance to kind of walk through some of these. So we're going to do a draft. We've done something like this before. We're going to do a draft, three rounds, just kind of three of our favorites, three of yours, three of mine, and talk a little bit about those episodes and why we like them so much. So you ready for this, man? You all ready?
Let's do it.
Well, okay. Let's do it right here. And I got a coin right here. I'm going to flip. So you call it in the air. I'm going to do it like President Trump did at the Army-Navy game. Kind of just throw it all over the All right, here we go. Here's the flip. What you got?
Tails, dog. You know what it is.
It's heads.
Dang.
It's heads. So I'll go first. God.
Was it heads? Was
yeah,
it heads?
Yeah,
or did you turn it? Well, you're known, but you're known to pull stuff like that. So you might have turned it as you were, you know. You might have turned it around.
Well, there was a game we used to play when I was in middle school called Get Like Me.
See?
Where you flip the coin, and then if I say I'm like you, we both have to have heads. If I say I'm not like you, then you'd have a tail, I'd have a head. But what I learned to do was feel the surface of the coin so I could tell if it was a head or a tail.
See?
Head is smooth. Tail is a lot more rough, right? That's, a little bit more rough. And so as I would reveal the coin, I would flip it around to match whatever I called in my hand. And man, I won so much lunch money like that, man, just playing that game. It like me. Okay, but I'm going first. I digress. So of all the guests we've had, man, I'm just kind of pouring over this right now, Chris, just taking a look here. And so I guess my first pick would be KG, Kevin Garnett. Yeah. Got to go with Kevin Garnett. And not because of all the great stuff he says in terms of, you know, Giannis and the early part of his career and his relationship with Bobby Portis. He talked about him and Doc, but his role in Uncut Gems, which was just masterful to me, the movie with Adam Sandler. But the reason I like KG as number one, Chris, and you could probably guess this, maybe not, but at the very start of the episode,
Keith,
I was in my home office. I had all these papers disheveled on the side to my right. And KG was like, Keith, baby, check him out. Hey, man, what were you saying about my, I told you I had my paper shit, man, trying to make it look like I was busy.
Nah, man, you got to get all that out. And then we're seeing some more. I got some McKaylin for you. I'm going to put a little bottle of whiskey over there. I'm going to put some golf balls up there, a couple basketballs. You said you and son, just y'all got the tandem going. So you got to put all them awards and achievements up there. We want to see the paperwork to the house and the bills and all that, man. Get that off the desk, man.
The mortgage payment.
I want to see the bill. Got bill. Look, these are all the kids' bills right here. Over here, right here. Look.
Come on.
Hey, Keith. Come on, Keith. Show us that. This is all y'all. These are all the kids right here. Look.
What kind of legal papers for the divorce?
Come on, the kids right there. I know what that pile looks like. I got a pile look just like that.
You know what time it is.
Man, I got to remind myself, no, constantly. Yeah, man. I mean, he took me to task on that one, man. You know, it's like, come on, you know, you're going to be a pro at this. It's a professional podcast, man. And you got all your bills and everything all over the place, man. And I told him it was a lot of divorce documents. You can relate to that. But anyway, KG, well, you know, you got to get all these financial documents and all this stuff together. Man, it's a whole thing. But KG can relate. You can relate to that. And so, anyway, but KG, man, just he's always been one of my favorite personalities, you know, and yeah. He is one of these guys. And Chris, when I say one of these guys, and for the most part, most of the superstars of any era that followed me have been really, really, really gracious about giving up the props to me and what I did in my career. Now, you know, I don't know if they're just doing it by road, if they don't have a clue, if they actually looked up stats or highlights, but whatever it is, I'll take it. And they've been really, really gracious, man. And
yeah,
I'm just really appreciative of that for him coming on the show, giving us some great insights. Yeah. And the other thing, that episode that we talked about in high school, when he got into that incident, he got arrested. He got arrested. It was a arrest for lynching. Yep. It was a lynching charge that they had back in those days in South Carolina. He had to get out of town, go to Chicago. So, I mean, just some real deep, insightful stuff that we were able to cover. So to cover great, insightful stuff, ask him questions that no one has really, really, really kind of delved into on any kind of a deep level, and to have him respond and jump right in there with us, man, was terrific.
Yeah, I think he gave us some high level perspective. You know what I'm saying? Like he talked about his relationship with Bobby, how that started, the genesis, what that looks like. He also talked about early impressions that he had of Giannis. Like that to me was good stuff. Just to hear from another freak of nature type dude and how they view a freak of nature. You know what I'm saying? It's always fascinating to hear that. I loved hearing about him talking about Doc Rivers. That to me opened my eyes because I know a lot of several dudes that played for Doc, Matt Barnes, some other ones. To hear that perspective from KG was a little bit refreshing.
Yeah, let's listen to a little bit of that conversation about Doc Rivers. Hopefully, one of the highlights of your career playing for Doc Rivers, winning that championship in Boston. And I reached out to Doc, man, and Doc said this about you. He said, KG's the best, man. What made him special was he was a superstar that gave himself completely to the team. He would literally sacrifice anything for the team to win. His leadership and will to win and compete is unmatched, the best. What also made him special was his basketball IQ, and he was a straight baller, MJ. He could literally do anything, offensively or defensively, man. That's Doc Rivers. Let me hear you give Doc some of his flowers. That's your flowers from Doc. Give Doc a couple of flowers here.
Yeah, first off, man, I want to say probably one of the, if not the best inspirational coaches I've ever been around. And what I love is that he is from it, and he hasn't forgotten where he's from. If anybody know Maywood and what the West Side and parts of that is like, his dad was a cop. He was true to who he was. He never bent or, you know. Yeah. Man, Doc is probably one of the more intelligent people I've ever met. Always coming up with quotes, always having things in the chamber that he hits you with. He's definitely a chess player. He was one of the stimulants, one true stimulants in our league that I actually value. When we actually talk basketball, he was able to be on another elite of X's and O's. But Doc also, man, he is a special type of coach. If you don't have any type of real passion and real understanding, and if you want to talk Jedi with him, then you have to actually be a doer. You can't just sit in his office and talk about what you want to do. At some point, he's going to put, you know, pin the pad and expect you to actually perform and actually see some of these things that you aspire. And I like to think that he pushed me every day. He pushed me every day. Every day that I thought I was better than yesterday, he would, you know, push me. And every day, you know, he would go through this line of 2 weeks me, 2 weeks Ray, 2 weeks Paul, 2 weeks Rondo, 2 weeks Baby, 3 weeks TA, 3 weeks Tony, Kendrick Perkins. Like, he would just have these things, but he was sharpening us, man. He was sharpening us. You know, a lot of us don't have fathers, or a lot of us didn't have, you know, fathers or father figures in our lives, man. I like to think that not only was he my coach, but he was my big brother. But he served as a father figure to be able to sharpen and help me with things that I lack, not just in basketball, but in life. Help me try to be a better husband, better father to my kids. When I say a mentor, nothing better to say that not just a friend, but family.
Yeah. So, you know, that's KG, man. That's KG. That's why he's not my number one pick in terms of probably. And it's, this list is just so exhaustive here of just terrific person. It was tough. It's not a given. It's not easy, but I'm starting with KG. All right, your turn. You're up. The clock is on.
Right. Personally, I feel like my favorite was Doc Rivers, okay, because it's not often that you get to chop it up with the head coach of an NBA team. Not only that, but one of the greatest coaches of all time, one of the best coach executives of all time as well. And we got the insight talking to Doc just about, like, I had the question about how he's going to manage and balance the youth on the roster with the old dudes. I enjoyed that answer. I also enjoyed that Tim Duncan conversation, the story about Tim Duncan almost coming to Orlando. Let's check that out.
We had Tim Duncan for one night. We had Tim Duncan, Tracy McGrady, and Grant Hill.
Woo!
All commit. But Marcus, Chris, we only have money for two.
Yeah. Okay.
And so we're sitting in the office that night thinking, okay, guys, what are we going to do? Who are we going to pick?
Yeah.
And I'm never going to tell you who we picked. So,
what did Coach Castle, what was, you remember any of the recruiting trips that tips that he gave you?
You make it personal to him. Everything's about him, and be extravagant, you know,
go big. Okay. Yeah.
So we went to Disney, and they did with the big Disney fireworks show they did every night. And in the middle of it said, welcome Tim Duncan to the Orlando Magic. We did everything. We really did our research.
Well, if that would have been Brook Lopez, you'd have had him right there. I'm just thinking about what kind of big three that would have been. I mean, if they could have pulled that one off, man, you're talking about a team that, that's one of them what ifs. You know what I mean? How great that team could have been.
Yeah. So Doc, it would be the Doc Rivers episode would be my first draft pick.
Okay. All right, Doc Rivers. So we got KG. We've got Doc Rivers. And now I'm back up on it for my second pick of the draft. And so, God, this is a tough one. But I got to go with Ice Cube. You know, O'Shea Jackson Sr. I got to go with Ice Cube, man. You know, we had a great conversation with him. And just the magnitude of a celebrity that he is. And I'm not just, and I ain't going to say as a musician or whatever. You can't pigeonhole this dude. You know, he's a producer. He's a writer. He's an actor. He's a rapper. He's, you know, he does so many great things. And he's a great storyteller. And again, once again, for someone of that magnitude in terms of what he represents culturally, here in the United States to spend the kind of time that he spent with us, Chris. And I know he's promoting the Big Three, and that's even something that he's doing an outstanding job of. But you know, when we talked about, this is like a topic close to our hearts, but my heart in particular as we're having this conversation, but how did LA culture, you know, kind of shape his identity as an artist and as a person? I thought he had a really, really great in-depth answer that he gave us.
Because you capture, man, the essence of Los Angeles in your music like few others have been able to do. And as an old school guy, I've always appreciated that. And the one thing that connects me with your music, man, is that these samples are from songs of my era. So you got the Isley yeah. Brothers, you got the Daz Band, and it gives me cred with my kids because I can say, "Oh yeah, that's you know, that's the Daz Band, or that's Between the Sheets." You know, like, how do you know all that? So that's my era. So you've been able to bridge, man, some generations, man, with your music that they probably without even intending to. I don't know.
Yeah, I grew up. You know, my brothers and sisters, you know, they're about. You know, y'all are probably in the same school. You know, they, you know, a few years older than me, and they would always hit me to the funk, you know what I mean, to the good music, to the soul music, the R&B. And we grew up loving that music. So when it was time to do our music, that's what we sampled from.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great era. You know, it don't get no better than the music from the 60s, 70s. And 80s. And so, you know, I still lean back and grab some of that music because now the newer generation need to, you know, they need to hear it through me and then find the original. So, you know, great music never die.
Yes.
So I'm proud. And, you know, that's L.A. You know, L.A., people think L.A. is surf and sun, but it's a culture in L.A. that's a little more. A little more street, you know, a little more funky than that. So I love to be able to present that in the music.
Yeah. Ice Cube, Chris. That's
a great pick.
Pick number two. Yeah.
That's a great pick. For my pick number two, I got to go with Bobby Portis. And the reason I go with Bobby, not often that I get an opportunity to chop it up with a guy like that and find out just how he moved. Found out he called Giannis and pitched himself as a fit. I thought that conversation and that revelation was super interesting. We could check that out here.
But back up. So now, and I heard this story that the Bucks didn't recruit you. You came to the Bucks. Yeah. Talk about that story that phone call and everything that happened with that.
Yeah. So like this is gonna correlate with the last question too. So. Me signing a team option deal, the Knicks turned down my team option. They tried to re-sign me in because, like, the bubble, like, the Lakers won a championship, like, October 2020.
Yeah.
And free agency was, like, November 2020. Like, the month's all the way off. Like, free agency, like, November now. So I remember, like, the Knicks calling me back, telling me that they're going to turn down my team option. And they're going to offer me a two-year $20 million deal.
From 18 to 10 million is what they was cutting you down.
Yeah. They offered me a two-year $20 million deal.
Yeah.
But the second year team option again. So I'm like, hold on, bro. Hold on. Like,
I ain't falling for that again.
So that means next year I'm going to be making $4 million next year.
Right.
Like, what we doing?
Wow. Yeah.
So I remember vividly me being at home. That's just watching, like, I've watched basketball so much. Like, I watch basketball every day so much, but during the pandemic, I was focused on what other team I can get on to show guys that I can help a team win. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just watching the Bucks during the pandemic, watching them play against the Magic, watching them play against the Heat in the second round. I'm like, bro, like, that's a team I feel like I can fit on, that I can just be Bobby. And I can help the team win. November comes, my agent presents these offers to me. It was like Minnesota, it was like the Knicks, and it was like somebody else. But all these offers was team option deals, which I don't want a team option deal.
Yeah.
I want to at least be in control of my own destiny.
Yes, sir.
I'm like, hey man, like, bro, you got Giannis' number. He like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm like, bro, do you have Giannis' number, bro? He was like, no, but why do you need his number? I said, man, just give me his number, bro. He got his number. I called him, bro. Swear, I called him like, yo, bro, like, you don't know me, bro. I don't know you, bro, but I can help y'all win a championship, bro. I feel like I can help y'all win a championship. And 6 months later, we won a chip, bro. It was one of the craziest things that like one of the craziest feats that I accomplished, bro. Like,
but Bobby, back up a minute. What was Giannis's response, though? This is what I'm interested in. When you said, yo,
his
bro,
response was like, we don't have any money. Like, I'm like, bro, it ain't even about the money for me. Like, it ain't about the money for me right now. Like, it ain't even about the money.
Wow.
Like, I just need to get on the team to get my name back right. Like, everybody calling me a bad teammate. Everybody calling me everything that I'm not. Like, people don't know who Bobby Portis is because I ain't been on a team to display who I am. Everybody think I'm just this mad, crazy motherfucker. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Everybody think I'm just this mad, crazy person that can't play ball or I can't help a team. I'm just a bad locker room guy. I've never been a bad locker room guy. I just got a bad rip because I hit somebody.
Just knocking fools out.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Bobby. I mean, but then pitching himself as a fit, but then just to get a better understanding of how much his mom impacted his life, how much she means to him through his, you know, and everything with like his foundation and all of that. Just, you know, we got to understand what Bobby is really about. Like, you know, you see the eyes and you see the, you know, Bobby on court, but off the court, I walked away with an understanding that this, you know, he's a sweet young man and he's got a big heart. And, you know, he's just one of those dudes where he's a totally different dude when he gets on the court. That was dope. That was dope for me.
Yeah. No, that's a great pick. That's a good pick. Now, from my third and final. So many great choices to choose from. Jemele Hill, reflecting on the state of sports media and social media.
But when do you think it changed into this hot take, controversial? The hotter the take, the more controversial, the more popular and more successful you are in this business. When did it change? Who changed it, Jemele?
Definitely social media is a driving force because America is a consumption economy, but now we've become an attention economy, which is different. And there is way too much upside in gaining attention, be it the right kind or the wrong kind. People now look at journalism as an avenue to which you can become famous. And that was not the case when I started off in journalism. Like, when I, you know, my first professional year as a reporter was 1997. I was a reporter covering sports for the News and Observer in Raleigh, North Carolina. And, you know, at that time, you sort of signed up for journalism under the impression that you would never be rich, that you would never be famous, but you love to tell the story of competition, of athletes. You were in it for the sport and also the journalism as well. And I think as you saw more journalists being able to make, being able to cross over writing books, having TV shows, having radio shows, there started to be a lot more skin in the game and a lot more currency in creating attention. And I think some of it was just organic. Like, I think the majority of people, especially when I first started at ESPN, which would have been 2006, the majority of people were on air saying what they felt. They weren't trying to gain attention. They weren't trying to have a hot take. It's like, that's how they felt. They were passionate about sports and that was fine. And I would say probably somewhere between 2010 and 2015, that got a little different where you now had younger journalists who were looking at the journalists on ESPN and thinking like, I want to be there one day. I want my opinions to hold weight and to matter. But what they couldn't see is that most of us that were on air at that time, we had had careers as actual journalists. Like, for as much as people can say about Stephen A. Smith, I mean, he used to cover the NBA. He covered Allen Iverson. Like, he was considered one of the best NBA reporters and insiders in America. That's how he got to ESPN. And unfortunately, like with young people, they see him on TV and they think, oh, he got to ESPN because, you know, he's very loud and he has these bold opinions. Like, that's not what got him there. It was actually the reporting that got him there.
And then we had another tremendous female media personality, Monica McNutt. And that conversation, her touching on the collective bargaining agreement, what was going on with the WNBA and how this is a really, really important time for these ladies.
It is a crazy time, but it is an exciting time. I can remember the Final Four in Dallas a few years back when LSU won, and we were doing the prep meetings, and Dawn Staley basically was like, you know, ESPN is cool, but we need more folks to fight for these rights, of the broadcast rights. She's like, that's when the opportunity will grow for all involved, right? That's when you get the money and the growth. And that's what we're seeing happening on the WNBA side. There are now more options for professional athletes to take their talents, which ultimately raises the bar as these leagues compete, if you will, air quotes, compete for the best talent. And then, of course, the demand from fans and the interest and the investment. I mean, this has been a year-over-year increase, right? And so I'll be honest, I have not delved deeply into Project B. But I think when you see the names that Project B is attracting, I mean, Nneka Ogumike is at the top of that list, right? You know it's no joke. And when you consider the stalemate, if you will, but of the collective bargaining agreement right now for the WNBA, like, it makes sense for these athletes to take, at least explore the other opportunities. For years, the only exploration has been to go overseas. And don't get me wrong, a ton of WNBA players have made excellent lives playing basketball overseas. Whether they should or should not have to is a debate. Whatever you stand on that, that's fine. But I think the idea that elite athletes have other opportunities is healthy in terms of how you do business at any level. We just happen to be talking about women's sports players, right?
So yeah, had to get the ladies in there because they said so many great things. But I mean, just so the old, go ahead.
No, not to interrupt you. But when I keep just going back to our roster of people. And
so
we haven't even mentioned Brandon Jennings, Mad Dog, Chris Mad Dog Russo. I mean, like, literally one of the icons of sports media freaking radio was on this show showing us major love, bro. Like, that was sick. And then, but MJ, how can we not? Am I supposed to pick another episode?
Well, I got, I'm giving like a roster of choices right now.
All right, so look.
So I haven't given my third choice yet.
Neither have I.
Yeah, so you mentioned Mad Dog, Roy Wood Jr., we got to throw him in there, Brandon.
Yeah.
But I wanted Olin Simplest. Remember, Olin talked about the reason why he probably wasn't with the team right now. A lot had to do with the color of his skin. And you know, that was an interesting insight on his part because he's one of the best. The Guard Whisperer, come on. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Serrano.
Evan Mobley. I'm talking about all the people that Olin worked out with. You know, Clint Parks and what he's done with Kawhi Leonard and the McDaniels brothers and Kyle Kuzma had Kuz in the lab all summer. And some of the stuff he talked about with Kuz, what he looked forward to him doing this season. Check this out. What was the focus this offseason?
Like, the three things I talked about with him all summer was fundamentals, discipline, and accountability. Obviously, he works really hard. He takes very good care of his body. He's in really good shape right now. But just my thing to him is just like, not settling for jumpers, like not just shooting, like really getting downhill, putting pressure on the rim, you know, playing out in transition, rebounding the ball like a madman, like being somebody who's double digit rebounds every game. Like, that's how he got to the league. So I always go back to tell guys, like, when, you know, you're going on year nine for Kuz. So like, there's like, everybody's career is like, you're reinventing yourself. You're in different situations. So you're going to have those peaks and valleys. But my biggest thing to him, it was just like, do the things that got you to the NBA.
So, but I've got to go with number three, and I'm gonna say this.
I know who it is.
And some of you out there that heard the interview may be like, well, it was okay. It wasn't all that in depth. There was a lot of stuff we couldn't play on the air.
GTC, GTS, GTC
Senior, Gary Trent Senior. Man, he just poured his heart out, and a lot of stuff that we couldn't talk about in terms of his upbringing, growing up as a young man, and some of the things that he went through out there in them streets. Couldn't come home until he'd reached a certain quota of doing a certain thing out there in them streets, you know, out there in them streets and the pressure that he was under. And then you realize he was able to break through and have this successful basketball career at the Ohio University first, the Jack of the Mac, and then to go on to the NBA. And then, and as we know, to produce a son, you know, you got my grandson, Will, your son played at Oregon with Dana Altman, doing a great job developing young people now. You know, me and our relationship, and just to see his son, GT Jr., and his feelings about Gary Trent Jr. And Gary Trent Jr.'s commitment. Here's a funny story about just some of their interactions growing up.
But with your son, you at 5, 6, 7 years old, you just put it to him like, man,
when I first started doing his player development, I didn't have any blueprint. So I was like, okay, I just need to get everything got to be volume and everything got to be high reps. So I took my son to the track where I used to go to middle school at. And I said, son, I want you to dribble me a lap. Dribble me a lap with your left hand. I said, it's not a sprint. I'm just making you do dribbles. I said, every 100 meters, I want you to stop. Give me 10 push-ups. Give me 10 sit-ups. So I will make him do one lap with his left, another with his right, another with his left. And then the fourth lap will be crossovers. And then the fifth lap will be plyometric skips. And the sixth lap will be just dribble, sprint, dribble. But you had to stop every 100 meters and give me 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups. That's 160 push-ups, 160 sit-ups on the five-year-old. You know, I was a big fan of Bobby Knight, and I was a big fan of, like, grind work. Like, just grind you to death. Just you want to quit. Yep. Like, just work till you want to quit, and then when you want to quit, I ain't going to let you. Mm-mm. And, you know, I didn't have no blueprint. I didn't really know what to do. I just know if I keep him volume dribbling, volume shooting, you know, so we'd do all that dribbling, and then I just take him in front of the rim, and just make him stand there, because I had a rim in the driveway that I lowered, and I would just make him stand there, take one step layup, you know, because I lowered it to like 7 feet or something, just one step layup, and I just taught him to lay up, left hand, right hand, and dribbling. And then as he got older, we start moving back and whatnot, because people start them kids too early on the jump shots, and you make it a heave instead of a form jump shot. So I want him to stand in front of the rim just with that form, just to lock on that elbow and whatnot. And, you know, because I used to always use Dirk as an example, because when you watch pictures of Dirk, that elbow be locked, you know. And like I tell him, I should see your armpit. I should be able to see your armpit when you shoot your jumper, because if not, that means you didn't shoot it up and then you shot it forward. If you ever see some of his pictures, you know how he be kind of like leaning back.
Yeah.
If I can't see your armpit, you didn't put no arch on it. You didn't give it a chance. You know, because the deeper you go, you got to put arch on that thing. I need to see your armpit.
So that's it for me, man. That's my three. I had KG, Ice Cube, and Gary Trent Jr. with a nod to Monica McNutt and Jemele Hill, these ladies that did a great job. But that's my first three picks. Your last pick is who?
Well, I was thinking about the Gary Trent Sr. interview. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say about that, like the fact that Gary Trent Jr., I think when they were in college, he was in college. He was like, I could call my dad at 2 and 3 in the morning. And he'd meet me at the gym to go shoot. I mean, that was special, because Gary Trent Sr. was like, yeah, sometimes, man, I'll be coming home from the club. You know, I get a text and I have to go from the club to the gym. But that's dedication. But my third pick, okay? My third pick, I got to go. Man, I'm this dude. I got to go with Zach Lowe. I'm going Zach Lowe. No question about it. First of all, I'm a Zach Lowe fan. So being on the same podcast, sharing the same airspace with Zach and all these type of people means something to me. But Zach especially, because I've always wanted to pick his brain and have a conversation with him. I loved his insight. I loved his tidbits. I loved everything that he was talking about, especially though, this when he tried to break down, you know, Giannis's path to a third MVP, that to me was pretty dope.
It's early, and we can't be prisoners of the moment. But the broader question, Zach, for you is just what will Giannis? And you talked about this a little bit on your podcast. But what has to happen for him to be able to shake
out of that third place spot in the MVP voting that he's been locked into for the past couple of seasons now?
Man, we're already doing MVP voting.
See, well, we got to placate Giannis, man. They call this a gap year, and when Dame first went
before
all the stuff happened and the stretch and all that. And so the whole idea was for Giannis to have this great season to keep him happy, so you know he would be inspired to finish out his career here in Milwaukee. So that's just from that context more than anything else. But do the Bucks have to be a top five team in the East? Do you see those things as being, you know, dependent upon each other?
History would suggest that you are very unlikely to win an MVP if your team is not in the top four, no matter how dominant you are. There have been a couple of exceptions. I think one of Jokic's year, they might have been sixth, but he was just so otherworldly, and the standings were so jam-packed, there was like no difference between sixth and third. In the East, yeah, I think you got to get fourth, fifth at worst. But look, if he keeps playing like this, Shea's off to a good, I mean, Shea had 55 already in a game. Like they're all, it's a, like these top guys, and you throw Wemby in there now too. It's just every single night something ridiculous happens. So you have to hope that there's maybe a little bit of voter fatigue with some other guys, as Giannis has suffered from before himself, I think. And the Bucks, look, if he plays anything like this and the Bucks sniff 50 wins with this roster, people are suckers for a sort of just gargantuan individual effort to carry a team that doesn't look like it should be winning as many games as it should. And that's exactly what he's done so far.
Well, there you have it. That's our three favorite interview subjects for this past year. Now we're going to get into just one moment from 2025. On the court, off the court, whatever it is, but one moment.
We're going calendar year, so we're going calendar year. If we go one moment, if we go one freaking moment, there's only one, for me, there's only one moment. My moment is that Pistons win when Giannis, without Giannis.
Yeah.
I felt like that was incredible. The fact that they were able to do that, rally the troops.
Yeah.
Potentially show Giannis that they can win without him as well, given everything, all the noise around the team and, you know, the need to have a team that's competitive. I thought the timing, I thought the performance, and I thought just rising to the occasion. You could just see KPJ, Rollins. You could see dudes, Jericho Sims. I mean, dudes were playing with an extra pep in their step. And it was kind of one of those games you just wish they could bottle up that energy and take it game by game, you know. You saw a glimpse and a blueprint of Bucks basketball without Giannis, a winning version of it. So I thought that for me, was an incredible moment.
Yeah, so that's a great one. That's a great selection. That Pistons victory without Giannis. So now I got to go back a little further. So you went with a great inspiring moment by this team without Giannis. I'm going to go with a great inspirational moment with Giannis, provided by Giannis. Doing something that Giannis saved for big moments. I think his 10,000 point or whatever was a three-pointer. I mean, some milestone moments in his career. I think 20,000 might have been a three. You know, he knocks down jumpers, Chris, at milestone moments. He's just remarkable in that sense. And so for me, it was a lot of things happening. Miles Turner goes back to Indianapolis for the first time since, you know, he signed with the Bucks as a free agent, got introduced. And I had anticipated, Chris, I don't know why, I thought the fans would be cool. I mean, there were most cases like that, especially in Milwaukee, Chris Middleton comes back. And I understand it's a whole different scenario, totally different circumstances. But normally a guy spends 10 years in one place and is no longer there for whatever reason, the fans will show their appreciation. Well, these people in Naptown, Indianapolis, man, they booed Miles like I did not expect, you know, unmercilessly. They just booed him. And so the game comes down to a final play, and then here's what happened.
Giannis against Siakam with time ticking. We're tied at 115. Single digits on the game clock. Giannis with Nesmith switched out on him. Giannis with the back down. The paint away. The shot is good. With zeros on the shot clock. Giannis with the game winner. Bam. In Indy.
Looking the clock all the way down. He's shooting this all the way.
Gonna turn, fade, right shoulder, fade away.
Yeah, that's right. The big fella knocks down the fadeaway jumper. And so here's some of the ironies of irony. The playoff game that the Bucks lost in Indianapolis when Gary Trent got on a burner and we thought we would be able to pull that out. Giannis missed a fadeaway jumper on the left baseline that could have won that game in regulation. For him to come back, this situation, hit that jumper from out top the way he did, the little fadeaway, and then, the hushing of the crowd.
That was dope.
Yeah, yeah. You know, to me, that was just in terms of a teammate standing up for another teammate. You know what I mean? And just to put the extras on it, to show those fans, that's not the way that you treat somebody with respect. And so Giannis putting the exclamation point on that win with the jumper and then giving them the I think that's probably one of my favorite moments. So I got to give it up to Giannis and what he was able to do. So that's, you know, that's what we got for you. So that's favorite podcast, favorite moments. And, you know, it's been a really good year. Again, thank our producers, Dylan Carter, Monis Khan for coming up along with Chris Johnson. You don't understand the work that Chris does to pull in these great guests also. You know, Matt Barnes, Bob Myers, Baron Davis, just going to Earl Watson, going down the list. And so we thank you, Chris, for your efforts. But it's been a good year, man, and 2025, and look forward to bringing you more great content to here at District 2026. And we look forward to coming to you every week and bringing you great content, and we shall continue to do so in 2026. Happy New Year, everybody.